Welcome to the Drop Time Report. Turn up the volume and listen to amazing stories about big bucks and the hunters who harvested them. Here is your host, outdoor writer, Tracy Breen.
Welcome to the Drop Time Report. On this week's episode, we're going to have on Kyle Kinsey out of Ohio. He is actually a part of the Whitetail Edge crew. Whitetail Edge has an online hunting show and a website with a lot of blogs and content on it. That's great for whitetail enthusiasts to check out who are, you know, trying to grow bigger bucks on their land. The cool thing about Kyle's story, he was able to kill a booner this year that he harvested on his own property, a small piece of property in Ohio, and he's surrounded by big ag and hardwoods, and some would say, man, it's going to be impossible for you to kill a monster buck there with all the hunters around you and all the agricultural ground. But he made a series of calculated improvements over the last couple years to try to make his property one of the best around. I call that the candy bar approach, really trying to make a property stand out in a sea of properties. And it certainly did work for Kyle. He had a great season and killed a monster buck. And today we're going to highlight that buck. But before we get him on the show, I'd like to thank my sponsors, my title sponsor, Redneck Blinds, Fourth Arrow Camera Arms. Turkey season's coming. Check out the Fourth Arrow Camera Arms if you're going to be filming a turkey hunt. Windscent, makers of vaporized deer scent technology. Morel Targets, they have an awesome target called the High Roller. If you have a high-speed bow, check that one out. Huntworth Gear. If you're tired of paying the long dollar for hunting clothes, check out huntworthgear.com. They have great clothing for a fraction of the cost of a lot of hunting clothes out there. Pine Ridge Archery, makers of the Nitro Vane, a great arrow vane that can handle extreme speeds and produce awesome downrange accuracy. Lucky Buck Mineral, Grim Reaper Broadheads, my favorite broadhead, Schaefer Performance Archery, makers of the XV Arrow Rest, an arrow rest designed to handle speeds exceeding 400 feet per second out of a bow. Illinois Connection Outfitters in Pike County, Illinois. Outdoorsmen's, they make some great backpacks for hunting, as well as tripod systems for glassing big game. And Wilderness Athlete, if you're on a you want to get on a diet this year, you want to shed a few pounds, you're tired of drinking energy drinks, check out wildernessathlete.com. My favorite product, their Hydrate and Recover drink. Enter Drop 10 at checkout and get a great discount on their product. Now let's go ahead and get Kyle on the show. Welcome to the Drop Time Report, Kyle. How are you today?
Good. How are you?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Congratulations on your big buck.
Thank you. Thank you.
Is that the biggest buck you've ever killed?
Yep. I finally made it into the boon class.
So. There you go. How many years you've been trying? How old are you?
34. I've been trying since I was 8 years old.
8 years old.
Started bow hunting at eight.
That's amazing. 8 years, you were bow hunting at eight.
Yep.
Wow. How many pounds were you pulling at 8 years old?
40 pounds.
40 pounds. That's cool. And tell us a little bit about this buck you were able to kill this last year. What did he score? You know, did he have some unique characteristics?
Yeah, so this buck showed up in June, and like he was just a new buck, came out of nowhere. And what made him so unique, like you could tell in June when he was in velvet that something was going to happen to his main beam, whether it was going to be a drop tine or something goofy was going on there. Well, as it progressed through the summer, that's exactly what happened. It was actually his beam just kind of rolled down in about 6 inches roll. So it kind of made him real unique. And we start calling him DKM, called him Dropkick Murphy. And because I had a redneck feeder in there and the deer would always kick my feeder and try to knock the corn out of it, out of the gravity feeder. So we just called him Dropkick. And he was running with two other pretty big deer. They stayed together all year until it was Wednesday before season. Our season opened September 28th on a Saturday. And that Wednesday, him and the deer we called Tex, he the real wide, short time buck we called Tex, got in a pretty good fight in front of one of my trail cameras on the food plot and made that deer go dark. So,
well, that's pretty early to have that happen.
Yeah, and he just bullied him. And so we knew right away that we had to get Tex killed. He was an older deer, too. He was actually, I actually had some history with that deer. So went in there to try to get my wife on that deer. And before I could even get my wife on it, my neighbor ended up killing him when it was like 92 degrees out. So that deer was gone. The bully buck was gone. And finally he came daylight again eventually. And hunted him, never did see him. Kept watching him on my Spartans at night.
So and, he was still, you know, showing up, just not during daylight.
Yeah, he was still showing up, just no daylight pictures. And finally he came daylight there at the end of October. And of course I was working and my vacation for rut hadn't started yet. And, you know, I was just sick to my stomach sitting at work watching that deer show up on my cell camera. But I knew if he showed up daylight then, I could get him in rut. And sure enough, November 1st was my first day of vacation. And went in later that afternoon, about 2:30 in the afternoon. And I killed him that day at 4:50 on November 1st.
Now, were you hunting over a food plot, or what were you hunting over?
No, I was actually hunting in a kind of a transition zone. I actually gave the deer the win that night. I went into an area where I knew it was on the backside of a bedding area. It was kind of a transition. And I knew, you know, these bucks should be cruising. This is kind of like a ridge on the backside of my bedding area, trying to pick up any doe scent from that bedding area. And that's why I gave him the wind. I kind of hunted him on a crosswind. And I saw 14 bucks before I killed that deer that afternoon.
Wow. And,
yeah, 14 bucks. Nothing big. A lot of two-year-old, three-year-old cruising. And then I was self-filming. And I was actually doing an interview with the camera, talking to the camera. And I just happened to look up and I seen Tynes about 100 yards away. And I threw my binocs on him and sure enough, it was him. And, you know, I just kind of relaxed and watched him, see what he was going to do. That's what he was doing. He's kind of scent checking all through a bedding there on the backside of it. And went up and hit a scrape and raked a tree. And I threw two bleats at him and he picked his head right up and came right in. And I ended up killing him at 13 yards.
Oh, wow. Wow. That's,
yeah.
Now, we were talking beforehand, kind of the interesting thing about your situation is you own a small piece of property, but mm-hmm. you border an enormous amount of ag. And this year, unlike previous years, you decided to kind of set your property up as a destination, so to speak. And so what are some of the things you did to really, you know, try to pull the deer onto your ground?
So after last year, the 2018 season, I went in there after the season was over. I went in March and took an excavator in there, and I made a couple more watering holes because there's not much of a water source around us. So I added some watering holes to my property. I do supplement quite a bit. I do a lot of mineral sites on my property, not necessarily ones that I hunt on over, like a mineral site to hunt over, just a lot of areas where deer move through to get them that nutrition. So I set up a lot of mineral sites. And also I feed year round. So, you know, I have the access to corn and also supplement the corn, because a lot of people don't realize straight corn for deer is not healthy. Even though they like it, it's just not healthy for them.
Yeah, the saying goes, I've had biologists tell me, you know, a deer could literally die alongside a pile of corn of starvation.
Yep, and they can. And so I do a lot of protein supplements in and use big time, you know, use a lot of big time with my corn. So that's some of the things I've done. I thickened up. We clear cut about a quarter acre of timber for just deer bedding only. And we did that 2 years ago. And now it is just thick as all get out. And that's what I was hunting on the backside of when I killed this deer.
Okay.
And one of the other things that we've done, we started not penetrating so deep onto the property. You know, it's a small piece. So we only hunt like the front 10 acres of it now, to where we don't pressure any deer on the backside. You know, this time of year right now, or all through up until about June, July, you know, I'll be running around the property, making sure the mineral sites are good and stuff. But once the end of July, August hits, I'm out of it.
Okay.
So I just allow them deer to get comfortable in there. And we know we've noticed a big change over the years by doing that, that especially this year, you know, the amount of bucks, big bucks that we had show up and deer that we normally don't get.
Now, what type of food plot did you plant this year to, you know, pull in that deer?
This year I just had clover in. I just had clover in the food plot this year. And you know, they're still working on it as we speak right now. So
okay. It
just, clover is something I've always tried to use over there. You know, it keeps coming back every year, and just keeping it mowed, it's a little bit easier for me to do. So that's what we've been using, is just clover.
Now, how big a food plot do you have?
It's small. It's only a quarter acre.
Oh, wow. Now, let's talk about, yeah, you know, the land around you that's big ag. I mean, this just proves you don't need an enormous plot. Here you have a small piece of property. You can't put in a 20-acre food plot, you know. And you have huge ag around you. Just kind of tell the audience a little bit about what is around you and how basically one tiny little food plot is all it took.
Yeah, so what's around us is about 250 acres of ag on the east side of, or south side of my place. And usually, you know, they rotate it, corn and beans, every other year. And we always come to find out every year that it's in corn. Our piece is a little bit better because, you know, the neighbors can't access a certain side of their woods because it's in corn, all the way up through rut. And allows for more bedding for them deer also. Even though if they're not on me, they still come over on me to utilize what I have for them. And then when it's in beans, it's a little bit rougher, but it is, it's true. Like you make them deer feel comfortable on you and you keep the pressure off of them. It don't take a lot of property to generate big deer.
So were you waiting until the time was right? I mean, how many days did you hunt before November?
I hunted twice.
Okay.
I've changed the way we use these Spartan cell cameras. I completely changed the way I used to hunt. It makes it a lot more efficient. You can watch what these deer are doing. You're not hunting blind, I guess you'd say, you know, and you're not wasting your time. Because the more times you go in there to hunt, less likely you're going to kill, in my opinion. You're leaving all that scent behind. And I literally hunted twice before I killed this deer. The first night of season, we hunted. And then there in mid-October, we hunted once. And then November 1st is when I killed it.
Okay. Okay. Now talk a little bit about your water holes. You said you put them in. Do you have a high water table? Was it as simple as, you know, bringing a dozer in and digging a hole? Or was there a little more work to it than that?
No, actually, there's a lot of springs in our woods. So I got lucky. Kind of what we did, we have a logging road that goes up through the middle of the property. And I just brought a mini excavator in, and I wanted to dry up the logging road where we drove through all the time because it was wet from a spring. So all I did was put some corrugated pipe in underground to dry it up. And at the end of the corrugated pipe, I dug a nice big hole for the water to drain down into. And that's what I did for that watering hole. And then another water hole, I kind of laid it in a low spot and then dug a nice big hole out and then laid a plastic liner in it, covered it back up with dirt, and just let the, you know, the natural fall of the ground fill it up from rainwater.
Now, when you say plastic liner, was it a true pond liner or just a tarp? Or
No, it just like a 6 mil liner that you could buy from Lowe's or Home Depot or somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just not expensive. You know, if you have access to a, to renting or to using a excavator, I mean, you can do a lot of improvements for fairly inexpensive amount of money.
Now, how big are these ponds?
They're not big at all. The one from the spring is maybe 8 by 6 feet and 2.5 foot deep. And the other one's maybe 10 by 12, two foot deep.
Now, adding that water, did it drastically increase the amount of deer movement on your property?
It drastically increased it. Like I said, there's a big pond in the ag field that butts up to me, but it's pretty close to the road. And, you know, most of the deer that do probably use it at night. So, I mean, to watch the deer on my piece during the daylight all the time hit these water holes, you know, when the does are fawning and stuff, you get a lot of pictures of the does and fawns playing around in the water and holes and stuff. It was a big drastic change.
So of the improvements you made, you also did some hinge cutting and some bedding area improvements. Talk about those a little bit.
So we started with a quarter acre a couple years ago and just went in and basically clear cut a quarter acre. And we made sure we did it to where when we accessed the property, if there was any deer on that area, that they couldn't see us coming in. So we strategically placed it where we were going to do it. And then a few spots throughout the rest of the property, I've hinge cut, you know, some junk trees to where a bucks or does or whatever can feel comfortable in certain zones to bed. And it just made a huge difference. You know, I don't hunt, like I said, don't necessarily hunt those areas, but I've set cameras in there just to kind of monitor and see how they've used it. And it made a big difference as far as holding deer.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you have both bucks and does bedding on your property?
Yes.
And yes, are you,
I go ahead.
And are you hunting, you know, close to bedding areas, or do you hunt over those water holes? You know, like, you know, a lot of Western hunters, for example, set over water. Are you doing that at all or not really?
Actually, where my redneck feeder is placed is pretty close to a watering hole. And I do not like to hunt over any type of feeder or it makes it worse for you, because if you're hunting over a food source like that, as far as bait, and you start filing deer in and say your target deer doesn't come in, you're going to get pinned in that tree and you're not going to be able to get out of it without blowing everything out of there. So sure. What I try to do is hunt, close, but not, but far enough away, I can get in and out without them seeing me. So like basically a transition area to where they're coming from the bedroom and they're going to hit my feeder in the watering hole and then move on to the ag in the evening. And same as morning hunt, where they're coming out of the ag fields on the neighbors, coming through, they're going to hit the watering hole, my feeder, and go back to bed. So I'm trying to hunt the transition areas to where they're moving and they're not going to be stopping there and feeding all evening. And that's how I try to do it.
Sure. Of the improvements you've made, what do you think the greatest improvement you made is? Is it water? Is it your quarter acre food plot? Is it hinge cutting and bedding? What do you think if a guy could only do one, which would you do?
Water is a huge factor in keeping, in my opinion, in keeping deer around. I mean, I would say water, my opinion, water would be number. It's hard. It's hard between bed and water, because if you can hold deer, it's great. But if your neighbor, say somebody else, for instance, their neighbor has great bedding but doesn't have any water, and you have the water source, the water is gonna benefit you. So if they have the water, if you have the water source, them deer have to come drink water at some point. Mm-hmm. They just have to. So I would say water would be one of the number one factors in, sure. in getting deer through you, moving through you.
And this was the 2019 season was your first year with the watering holes. So do you think that is what really pulled that big buck in?
I
mean, you never saw him before, right? This was the...
No, he just showed up. Like, yeah, we don't know. We don't know where he came from. You know, it's such big country back there where I have my property. You know, there's miles of timber. So, I mean, he just showed up. So I can't say that it was just the water that pulled him in there. I'd have to say that me starting to feed year-round, supplement year-round, would probably have been a bigger factor.
Okay.
Because my opinion is if you have something that they need as far as, because a deer knows what it needs. It knows when it needs protein, mineral. If you have something they need and they know where it's at, I think that's a huge, huge factor.
No, on your,
I think that's what really changed it this year.
Now, on your small piece, how many mineral sites and feeders do you have out?
Just one 750 pound redneck gravity feeder. And as far as mineral sites, I would say probably 15 to 20.
Oh, wow. On a small piece of property. Wow.
Yeah. Yep.
You want to bump into mineral every day. Makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why I do it. I do it. Like I said, I don't put them where I hunt necessarily. I just put them where I know the deer are moving. So they're getting that nutrition. They come by, they stop, they sit down or stop and eat the mineral for a while and they move on about their way. And, you know, I noticed that, actually, the second time I hunted this year, I hunted pretty close to a mineral site, and I had freshened that one mineral site since June, and the deer were still stopping there and chewing on that stump.
Okay.
In the middle of October.
And but before you made all these improvements, sounds like you – how many years have you been slowly making improvements?
We've owned the property since 2000. And so basically after 2004, we had a giant ice storm and we lost a lot of trees. So I would say from basically 2005, six, from then, just small little things. My stepdad's into, you know, the timber side of it as far as trying to grow trees and stuff. So he does his thing with that. And then I'm trying to do my thing with the deer management side of it. So slowly over the years, we kind of done little tiny things. And then just these last few years is where we've really both focused more on, you know, let's do some more, let's focus more on for the deer side of it than the timber side of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say in the last 4 years is we've really got aggressive as far as more deer improvements.
And you told me that last year you shot a, you know, 160 class buck. How about before that? You know, the few years before that, I mean, when you making big improvements, were you, I mean, was it just overnight, so to speak, as far as big bucks showing up?
So last year wasn't the 160. It was 160. Last year I shot a real nice, old, mature, 140-inch deer we called Stubbs. And I shot him January 19th last year.
Oh, late season.
Late season. And that's the way that property has always been. Anybody that knows me knows that I've always been the late season killer. I'm the one that likes to go out there when it's 8 below 0 and watch them deer file in to feed and stuff. So before then, you know, I've killed some bigger deer, that 160 when I was quite a bit younger. Let's back up even farther. In my opinion, the pressure 12 years ago where I hunt wasn't near what it is now. So there, in my opinion, there was a lot of deer on us and moving through us because the pressure around us wasn't near as bad. There wasn't as many hunters, in my opinion, bow hunters.
Okay.
Now, everybody and their brother around there bow hunts. And that's why I've gotten a lot more aggressive with the things that we do, not just for my the trying to grow big deer and healthy deer, is I know I need to take advantage of what I can do on my piece, because all these bow hunters I got around me now, I'm trying to hold them on me and keep them away from them.
Sure. I bet you have some sleepless nights, huh, when it's getting close to the rut and you're trying to stay out to make your property, you know, be the place the deer want to be, but yet you're surrounded by neighbors with bows in their hands.
The most sleepless night I had was on this deer, actually, right here that I killed this year, because a friend of mine hunts as a crow flies, probably a mile from my place, and he's seen him from his tree stand walking. And I was just gut-wrenched. I was like, man, watching this deer all year and then him walking like he was walking apparently on the neighbor. I was like, this deer is going to get killed and I'm not even going to get a chance to hunt him again. But, you know, the good Lord blessed me and everything happened to work out perfect and I was able to get him harvested.
Awesome. Now, was he bedding regularly on your property?
Yes, he was.
And do you know where he was bedding? I mean, is that something you narrowed down?
Yes, I narrowed it down. I'm pretty sure I had him pinned. But when he was walking that day that I killed him, he was coming from the neighbors, off of the neighbor piece. He kind of figured his travel corridor out is what we ended up doing. And he was kind of on a cycle and it was a weird cycle. And he would always end up back on me though. Just like the night that, my buddy seen him about a mile away. He saw him at 4:50 in the evening, 5 o'clock in the evening. He was back on my, I actually got a picture of him that night on my food plot at 7:30. So he was back on me in the evening. And then we go ahead.
You killed him in the evening?
Yes, I killed him at 4:50.
Okay. Okay. So he was obviously, you know, moving early in the day too. I mean, he was, not a last light kind of guy.
No, he wasn't. And like I said, seeing 14 bucks a day, I killed him. I don't know what was going on. At some point, a hot doe went through there. There was no hot does that came through when I was in the tree, but at some point there must have been a hot doe that was in there because I was covered up with bucks all afternoon before I killed him. And actually, after I shot him, I had a 145-inch deer walk right into where he was standing, where I'd shot him, smelled where he was standing, made a scrape, and then kept on going.
Okay. That's next year's buck, right?
Unfortunately, no. Somebody shot him. So
okay.
Somebody ended up shooting that deer.
You know what's intriguing to me about the story, and nice, you know, everyone talks about how they need an enormous piece of property. I regularly have guys on who kill bucks in small parcels, but I think what makes this story unique is in most cases, you know, people have a history with a deer. And you just did all these things, hoping that sooner or later it would pay off. And I would almost say you took the candy bar approach. And I always say the candy bar approach is where you give the deer everything he wants and needs. And so eventually they're lazy, right? And they just stay on your ground. And he bumped into your property in the middle of summer and said, hey, this is a pretty cool place. And you didn't, you know, how much money do you think you invest in this past year? Hopefully your wife won't listen. So you can be honest. it doesn't sound like you're investing an enormous amount of money either in making this happen.
No, I'm not. You know, now if I have access to corn, so I really have the advantage there as far as not having to pay for corn. If somebody had to pay for corn all the time, yes, it could get pretty costly. As far as the mineral, I make my own. I make my own mineral I can make 400 pounds for about $120.
Okay.
So, you know, to do that, if you don't overfeed your mineral, because sometimes guys think they got to go out there every week and dump 5 gallon bucket on a stump. You don't have to do that. You can just every 3 weeks go out, take a lucky bucket and dump half of it on a stump or dump a quarter of it. Go to your next stump, dump. You don't have to waste the whole bucket on one stump. Nobody wants to spend $20 on a bucket of mineral and just dump it, you know?
Well, it's important to know, I work pretty closely with Lucky Buck, you know, and people will complain that he has too much salt in the mineral, but one of the reasons you have a bunch of salt in the mineral is they're not going to eat a bunch either. Just because you don't see the mineral on the ground doesn't mean it's not in the ground, and they are only going to eat a little bit. The owner of Lucky Buck always talks about he'll put a 8-ounce glass of salt in front of someone and say, how much of that you think you would eat before you'd have to quit? Well, the deer are the same
exactly.
way. That's the beauty of feeding a mineral, regardless if it's Lucky Buck or any other kind, is that they're not going to overeat that. It's not like corn. It's not like pellets.
Nope. And, you know, perfect example, like I said, that one stump that I hadn't touched since June, middle of October, the deer were still stopping and tearing it up. And it soaks in, and you don't have to get crazy with it. You don't have to spend a lot of money. So I would say you're not going to break the bank trying to make improvements if you're smart about it and do your research and figure out what the deer really want and what they need as far as mineral, protein, that kind of thing. And that's where I'm at with it.
You know,
and some new stuff
with your food plot too. I mean, because you're putting a clover in, that's a perennial, so it's coming back. I mean, you know, you don't have to do it every year.
Nope, and you keep it mowed. You know, you might have to spend a little bit of money on some spray to keep the broadleaves out of it and keep it mowed. And the one big problem is with a small plot, though, if you have a lot of deer. They'll hammer it, and they could get it down to the point where they could damage it. Luckily enough, I got a lot of other food sources, plus that big ag field around me. You know, they're mostly feeding on that in the off season. And once that, say their beans, once the beans brown up, they'll come hit my food plot. Or once the corn gets hard, they'll hit my food plot. But during the summer, you know, when the does are pregnant and they're fawning, they hit the food plot pretty hard, but then they lay off of it and it gives it a chance to come back a little bit. And, you know, they're after my feed and the mineral and the neighbor's ag field. And of course, when the acorn, that's one big thing also that helps me on that little piece. We have a lot of white oaks.
Okay.
And when the acorn crop is good, my piece is on fire. So.
Yeah. Good. How often are you planting that food plot, or how many years ago did you put it in?
I think I put the clover in 3 years ago.
And you haven't replanted?
No.
That's awesome. Obviously there's maintenance, but it's nice that you haven't had to till it under and redo it all.
No, and I think we are this year. I'm going to get away from clover actually this year. We're doing some more food plot improvements this year. We're actually going to plant it's called a gigantus. It's a big tall grass that gets, you know, like 14 foot tall. We're actually going to shield the entire plot with that grass, just to make it even more secure for them deer, so they feel even more comfortable in that plot. And I think I'm going to put some kind of winter peas or something in it this year and try to change it up again. So there's more improvements that we're going to be doing this year again, to see if we can make it even better than what it already is.
I've heard a lot about that grass. The owner of Lucky Buck has been playing around with that. He actually bought a bunch of it. Sounds pretty intriguing. Grows really fast and then spreads on its own.
Yes. You plant it in little roots, and then don't have to be deep either. You know, just 2 inches deep and plant about 18 inches to 2 feet apart. And once that stuff starts growing, it'll start growing together and it just completely makes a shield around everything. And there's two reasons we're doing that on this food plot. Where my food plot is at on the property, the deer can see you. If there's deer around, they could see you walk up to it. So we're doing it for the deer to feel comfortable, and we're also doing it so we can access it better without getting seen coming in and out of the – we got a tower blind up there on the food plot. And so we got two goals in mind, deer protection and our protection so we can get in and out.
Sure. Cool. Well, I appreciate your time today, and congratulations on the big buck. Hopefully someday we'll have you on again with a 200-incher, huh?
Oh, man, you and me both hope.
Awesome. Well, thanks for doing the interview today. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Yeah, take care.
Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye. Week in and week out on this podcast, we continue to have guys who are finding monster bucks and killing monster bucks on small pieces of property. And that's pretty cool to me. You know, there's no question that if you have a lot of money and a big piece of property, it doesn't make harvesting a big buck easier. But more and more guys are applying those big woods, food plots, those tactics that large landowners are using. They're applying those tactics to smaller properties and having success. And that is definitely the case with Kyle. Congratulations again, Kyle, and hopefully you and the Whitetail Edge crew can do it again next year. To learn more about them, visit whitetailedge.com. To learn more about me, visit my website, tracybreen.com. That's TracyBreen.com. I use that website for booking speaking engagements for wild game dinners, so if you have a wild game dinner coming up, make sure to check that out. Also, I'd appreciate it if you guys could subscribe to the podcast and give me a review on iTunes or Google Play or wherever it is that you listen to podcasts. I just got confirmation today that the next podcast I'll be having on, I'll be having on a gentleman who found a deadhead in Wisconsin that could be the largest deadhead ever found in the state, one of the largest bucks probably ever found, 253 inches, so that should be a good one. Until next time, God bless, and have a great day.